Welcome to a long overdue episode of the Calling It Podcast. I'm Alex Farris, joined as always by Alex Lovewitz. We are recording Tuesday, December 3rd, quarter past the 7 o'clock hour. We are brought to you as always by CLNS Media. Lovewitz, I hope you had a good Thanksgiving.
I did. I ate a lot. I watched football. I slept.
Good.
Stayed rested. It was solid. It's the best holiday of the year by a mile.
It is. It is the absolute. There really should be a second one. It's that damn good.
But we should start celebrating. Like workaholics, they had half Christmas. We should do half Thanksgiving. I think that'd be a great idea.
In college, we had. I forget exactly how this started, but it was basically just a bunch of people bitching about how stupid Valentine's Day is. And instead of Valentine's Day, we celebrated what we called Second Thanksgiving. Me and my friend, we called Salty Steve. We went down to Wegmans. We bought a rotisserie chicken. We bought microwave mashed potatoes. And we basically just celebrated a second Thanksgiving. So I'm all for it. Like, replace Valentine's Day with another Thanksgiving.
But what's the difference? So there's Friendsgiving, too, which I don't like.
Well, because everybody spends Thanksgiving with their family. It's just another – here's how you know Thanksgiving is good. Friendsgiving is basically – What's an excuse to do like Thanksgiving more, to do it again? It gives you a second Thanksgiving dinner, right? That's all it is.
I guess. I don't know. I feel like it's overkill. I love Thanksgiving, but if I'm going to like hang out with my friends, I'm not like a Thanksgiving meal preparing all that isn't the first option on my list.
That's why you got to be the person who's invited to Friendsgiving. You don't prepare. You just show up, you eat, you watch the Celtics, you leave.
Another problem, though. Whenever we go to the Cape, who's the one who always cooks?
So you gotta call that favorite. No, the whole Thanksgiving week, though, is great, though. I am personally a fan. I didn't get to do it this year because I had to go see family out of state. But I am personally a fan of the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving at the local bar.
So oh, yeah.
From high school, because 95% of the people I went to high school with, they are great people. If you spend 5 minutes with them a year while you're drunk and not a second before. So that's always a fun night for me. Leftovers the next day are always good. The Iron Bowl, although not this year. I guess I had a worse Thanksgiving than usual. I love spending it with my family. They were great. But the Iron Bowl hurt a lot. First weekend in 8 years at the Patriots and Alabama lost in the same weekend. I was inconsolable, Lebowitz. Let's get to that, though. Enough Thanksgiving talk. Let's get to the Patriots. We got to talk about the Patriots. We haven't done a show in 3 weeks. A whole lot has happened. I want to phrase this very carefully. When I say it is time to be worried, the Patriots will be fine in terms of they will win their usual 12 to 14 games. They will win the division. They will get the bye. That's going to happen. Where I am worried is that those things I just listed, those are not how we measured success in New England. We haven't measured success that way for 20 years here. It's about one thing. And that thing's happening in Miami the first weekend in February. With their loss to Houston, the Patriots are now in danger of having to go on the road in the AFC Championship game to face a dangerous, albeit I say overrated, Baltimore Ravens team. I don't feel great about that. I do not. Screams to me 2015 in Denver.
I mean, it absolutely could be. I think the big difference is... One, this defense, even though that defense was good, this defense is exceptional. And I trust Bill Belichick the second time around playing a team after they had just been exposed. I think there's a lot of bulletin board material, for lack of a better phrase. And I think it's just a matter of knowing what to do from a lot of experience from that coaching staff and Tom Brady. So although the offense hasn't been great, it comes down to the defense if you do end up playing a Baltimore Ravens team, and I think that they would come together. The reality is people are always going to, you know, doubt the Patriots to an extent when Tom Brady isn't what he was in 2007. You know, media is overreactionary. They still have come back from far worse, and I'm still betting on them. They're still the top dog, in my opinion. Even though they're not playing like it, they've proven time and time again that that you just shouldn't count them out, and I've learned from that.
But a huge part of that was Rob Gronkowski. They don't have him anymore. And I just wonder if – look, Julian Edelman's having a career year. He's been great. James White is a weapon when they throw to him. That's another conversation. Do they have the horses behind those guys to get this thing done? I don't think Brady's dip in numbers has anything to do with Tom Brady. Well, It does, but I wouldn't say directly. I think the biggest contribution to the dip in Brady's numbers and performance is that he just doesn't have the talent out there around him, right? You could have the greatest quarterback in the world. You could have Brady in his prime and given me and you as wide receivers, and the numbers aren't going to be that great. I think that this is kind of coming back to get him. They did not do an adequate job this offseason of replacing Rob Gronkowski. And that, combined with some offensive line injuries, I think has just, you know, put a real ceiling on what Brady's able to do for them this year. And yeah, the most he can do at this point is not turn the ball over, which is what he did against Dallas and Philly. That's why they won those games. They lost the game in Houston in a large part due to that one interception, which wasn't necessarily Brady's fault, but that's what it is right now. The entire offense is based on not turning the ball over. And I mean, the defense is great, but they have to be able to produce, and they cannot do that right now. And it comes down to two guys for me, N'Keal Harry and Mohamed Sanu. You gave up a first-round pick for one. You trade a second-round pick for the other. I think you have Edelman as your number one target. Philip Dorsett and Jacoby Myers are fine as number threes. I actually think Myers has been a really pleasant surprise this year. He has. But until you have a true secondary weapon, a guy that when Edelman is double-covered, when you have a corner on James White, who you can trust more often than not to win one-on-one, you're not going to be able to operate offensively. And the Patriots do not have that guy right now. Well, they do, but he's not playing like it. It's either Mohamed Sanu or N'Keal Harry. Mm-hmm. One of those two guys has to start stepping up and making plays. They both played like crap on Sunday night. Derek, both a huge reason the Patriots lost. I'll finish my rant in a second because I know you want to make a point. Let me put the numbers behind this point here.
Mm-hmm.
You go back to that game in Houston. N'Keal Harry's interception, that gifts Houston 7 points. The defense was playing great at that point. Houston was not scoring if the Patriots even go three and out and punt. Okay, so you take 7 points off Houston, that puts them down to 21. At that point in the game, it's 21-3. Okay, you then go back and at the Mohamed Sanu dropped fourth down pass. If he catches that, he's probably off to the races, but I'll be conservative. Let's say they pick that up, they go another three and out, they kick a field goal. Here you are at 21-6. Patriots get another touchdown, regular drive to James White that makes it 21-13. And then they score that other touchdown. They botch a two-point conversion, right? They botch a two-point conversion. So that takes 2 points off the board. So at this point right now, I have the Patriots down down eight in the fourth quarter. The drive, Julian Edelman scores the touchdown. That's the game-tying touchdown. If N'Keal Harry and Mohamed Sanu each make one more play, and the coaching staff, who also had a really rough night on Sunday, doesn't botch that two-point conversion call. So that's what it comes down to. You got to have secondary weapons, and McDaniels has to be better. He has to be better. And it's not the usual complaints with him. He wasn't too cute Sunday. It was the opposite. He wasn't creative at all. Those are the guys that have to figure it out. N'Keal Harry, Mohamed Sanu, Josh McDaniels.
I would even add Philip Dorsett to the list because we've seen him be on a similar page as Tom Brady and be a productive member of that wide receiving core. I think the one saving grace here is the fact that you've seen production out of these guys. We know Mohamed Sanu is a quality wide receiver. We know Philip Dorsett can mesh in this offense. And Jacoby Myers the past few weeks has shown his value. N'Keal Harry, he's a rookie. He's obviously extremely talented, but can he really mold into this offense? Even if he doesn't, though, you have enough there to carry you with the defense that this Patriots team has. So there are correctable mistakes here, and I think you hit the nail on the head. It comes down to that wide receiving core and having the proper weapons out there for Brady, being efficient with route running and not dropping any passes. That hasn't been the way it's gone, and unfortunately that resulted in a loss this past weekend. But overall, those are correctable mistakes. And we've seen it again, time and time again with the Patriots, in which they go into games they're predicted to, you know, be underdogs in, or maybe they're slumping, and they pick it up. They're well coached. So I think the question you need to ask is, do you trust this coaching staff to get this wide receiving core on the right page, or is it too far gone? I just don't know what's happened with some of these guys, because on paper, you should be able to trust them. They should be giving you more than they have. And when Jacoby Myers and, you know, Matt LaCosse are your third and fourth top receivers, something's clearly missing. So what it is, I don't know. Maybe the illnesses had something to do with it, but they're correctable. They're definitely correctable.
All right. I mean, big game coming up. I think we'll learn a lot against Kansas City. We'll talk about that one next week. Let's move on to something a little more enjoyable right now. I'm surprised I'm saying I'm enjoying this. I love the NBA this year, Leibowitz. I do. You know why I love it this year?
Why is that?
There's no clear best team. The Lakers are good. The Bucks are good. You know, Celtics are hanging in there. The Nuggets have certainly looked good. The Clippers obviously have all the talent. But, you know, who's the best team in the league right now? Like, definitively, who is the definitive championship favorite? I don't know that there is one. And that's what it should be. That is absolutely what it should be. I you know, it's still a little top heavy. The right, if playoffs started today, we'd be asking why the season was only 19 games long. But you'd also have both 8 seeds and sub-500 teams. Not perfect, not great parity yet, but there's parity at the top. It's top heavy, but there's parity at the top, which you absolutely love to see.
100%. I think it's great to be in a post Golden State Warrior era, and there's just so much transformation this offseason that I think everyone's just trying to get a feel for what the playoffs is going to be, how each conference is kind of round out. And there are a lot of teams that have continued to build off of what they did last year. I don't know. To me, the Lakers, LeBron James, seem to be the favorites early on. Obviously, it's too early to tell, but anything could happen. And it's such a nice contrast from what we've seen in the past with this league, where it's, you know, the Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. And last year that kind of broke stride with the Raptors winning, and we've had some exceptions. But overall, it's nice to see that we have broken through that era in which if you were not a fan of one of two teams, you were kind of SOL. So I've enjoyed it as well, and I did not imagine I'd be saying that 3 years ago.
And, I mean, you look at the teams at the top of the standings, superstars are spread out. Top five, you even want to go top six in the East. The Bucks have Giannis, but they have some other good players. I wouldn't say any of them are superstars. Pascal Siakam for the Raptors, again, good. Is there anybody behind him? I don't even know if the Heat have a superstar right now, and they're third in the East. Celtics
Jimmy
have
Butler.
Kemba. Yeah, oh, that's right. They do have Jimmy Butler. All right, so Jimmy Butler, but again, just one. Celtics have Kemba. If you wanted Gordon Hayward's kind of fringe, maybe two. Sixers really only have one in Joel Embiid. Again, I think Ben Simmons is very overrated. And you get Pacers, Nets, Magic down there. And then the Lakers, they certainly have a dynamic duo. I wouldn't go as far as a big three for them. I don't think the Nuggets do. Clippers, again, I would say more of a dynamic duo than anything else. You're looking at duos, Mavericks, Rockets, but it's not just two teams with three superstars each at the top and then nobody else below them. It's been great. There is one superstar, though, who his team's in seventh right now in the East as we record this, a 10-10. Maybe it's because he hasn't played in a month, Leibowitz. And that's Kyrie Irving. We both have some friends that are Nets fans. And yes. I don't know how these people are still in denial. It's a carbon copy of what he did in Boston. And they can't convince themselves that this is going to be different. He's still a nutcase. He absolutely dodged the game in Boston. Don't give me any crap about it. His shoulder was hurt and he was being precautionary. He dodged that game. Since the opener in Cleveland, the year after he was traded for the Celtics, right? The game Gordon Hayward broke his ankle. He played that night, his first trip back to Cleveland. He did not play in Cleveland again as a member of the Celtics. And he did not play in Boston as a member of the Nets. He is running. He is afraid. He is scared. Maybe that's why the NBA is so great, because the guy who embodies everything that is wrong with it is hiding in the corner.
And you're forgetting one detail in regard to last week, ditching that game. Obviously, the fans at the TD Garden, where the Celtics play, were chanting, not in favor of Kyrie Irving. They were saying, I forget what the exact chants were.
Credit to them. They I think, had two or three chants.
They had a few of them.
Multiple. So credit to them for that. For creativity.
Creative. And I think I assume that there was going to be, Kyrie's a bitch type of chant or whatever. But he responds to that on Instagram in the Star Wars credits style post.
Somebody actually did that on Twitter. They put them on the Star Wars. I don't know if you saw that.
It was hilarious. So that's how long this message was. And the gist of it is, was, this is life, man. Who cares? Like, in the grand scheme of things, who cares? What a weak move. What just a guy who has been questioned his entire career about whether, you know, he has the emotional capabilities to be a leader, is going out on Instagram and bitching and moaning because a team in which he left in a pretty awful manner, their fans were mean to him when he wasn't there, when he failed to show up to the actual venue. Soft. He is one of the softest athletes in my lifetime. We talked about him being probably the most hated athlete in Boston in our lifetime, our former Boston athlete. He is the softest athlete in all of sports in my lifetime, in my opinion. This is a guy who has completely botched every situation he's been in. Despite being a generational talent, he's continued to play the victim in all these situations while giving these half-assed apologies that look good on paper. But when you see what he does here, you know, trying to defend himself against Chance the Horror, you can tell that it was all BS. All those apologies. He does not take blame for anything. He's not at fault for anything in his eyes. And that's exactly the problem. He's immature. He's a child. And he showed that last week. Not even not going to the game and not playing. Forget about the injury. To respond to the fans for chanting at you in a negative way, which happens all the time in professional sports. I can't imagine a softer, more stupid move than to do that. It's just going to get worse from here for him.
And it shows what the problem is with the guy, where the disconnect is why he wasn't liked. To look at it practically, and actually, if you want to actually get inside the mind of a psychopath and break down the argument he made, that this is life and there's bigger problems in the world and people have jobs and families and they shouldn't be worried about him. The reality of being a professional athlete is you are, above all else, an entertainer. You are, you know, an actor, musician, you're in that category. And these people, yes, they live in the real world. They have real jobs. They go out and use the money, and those tickets aren't cheap, so you can get paid your fat ass max deal. They spend their hard-earned money to get away from those real-world problems, to try to turn their brain off for 3 hours, hang out with a friend, drink a couple beers, and be entertained. That's what this is at the end of the day. That's what sports it is. It is entertainment. So to say, hey, this is real life, this is that. When you come out last year in, what was it, the second round of the playoffs, put up a bum-ass field goal percentage, and then tell the media, and by extension tell the fans, who cares, that's an attack on them. That's basically saying, I know you live a real life. You went through shit so you could come to this game tonight. You went out and you earned your money. You're just trying to get away from your life for a second. But who cares? Why should I care that you be entertained? Because that's your job, dude. That's your job. That's what you are there to do. Kyrie Irving wants this imaginary world. His utopia is he still gets paid $100 million to play basketball, but it's done in complete secret, under lock and key. They play in a gym under the Pentagon. With not a, you can't have a video camera, a picture camera. You can't have a fucking Polaroid. That is his utopia, and it's not going to happen. Look. If you don't want the attention, if you don't want a bunch of people expecting you to entertain them, don't play basketball. That's fine. And some people criticize athletes for that. I have all the respect in the world for that. If you have something you can do that you get paid hundreds of millions of dollars and you're comfortable walking away from it, all the power to you, right? If he wants to walk away and say, I can't handle it, I don't like dealing with the fans, I don't like living a public life. I don't like having these expectations. Yeah, people are going to call him soft, and that's a tough one. But fine, that's okay. But then when you go and you star in your own fucking movie and promote the hell out of it and then say you don't want the attention, you're just a hypocrite. And that is why Kyrie got heckled at the Garden Wednesday night. And that is why he has no case to come back at the fans and say they were immature. That's my rant. All right, let's move on.
That was a fantastic rant, by the way. Thank that was you. Great. I
think
if I had some advice to give him, if I were in his corner, talk less. That's what he needs to do. He needs to just talk less and bullshit the media.
Like I wouldn't even say talk less, just play into it. Like
I think, be the heel. Yeah, that's even better.
So I would say this. I think actually him and Marshawn Lynch have similar views of being a professional athlete. I don't know either of them personally, but based on the way they act in the media, I think they do. I think Marshawn Lynch has figured out the perfect way to be in the spotlight with that attitude. And he essentially builds an aura out of it.
And he doesn't...
He's turned himself into an enigma.
Definitely.
Go ahead.
I also don't think that he takes out any animosity he has towards being a public figure against his team or his teammates or the front office.
Well, so that's what I'm saying. I think Marshawn Lynch has taken that mentality of, and look, there's going to be shy people who play sports who are put in the public spotlight. It's not easy for everybody. I think Marshawn Lynch has figured out the best way to go about that if you're going to have to live that life. I think Kyrie is the complete opposite end of the spectrum. If you ask me, how can you be somebody who's socially uncomfortable, shy, doesn't want attention, but you have to live in the spotlight, I would say there's a scale for Marshawn Lynch, and I think Kyrie Irving has found the other end of that scale.
Definitely. I agree.
All right, let's move on. We're going to talk baseball. We're actually going to talk minor league baseball because it hits close to home. Those of you listening to the show or follow me on Twitter know I worked for the Little Spinners this past summer. Lebowitz is a baseball fan as well.
And I work for the flagship station for the Little Spinners.
That is true. You do. Right. But you have the wrong take on this, I think, because you are not as close to minor league baseball.
No, you know what?
Off the top, MLB wants to contract the minor leagues. Basically, each team would get two affiliates. That would result in them disaffiliating a number of teams, which the teams could still exist as indie league teams. You might see some become college summer league teams like the Brockton Rocks did a number of years ago. I would say at least half, more than half of the teams are going to be dissolved if this happens within 5 years of it happening. So
it's expected to be 40. It's going to go down from 160 to 120 roughly,
There's another cut after that. Like 10 years where eventually they'll end up with about 60 to 70 minor league teams.
Yeah. So, I think that that's definitely way too extreme. And I think that, you know, being in Lowell, I understand the impact that the Lowell Spinners have on that community. It was obviously built in 1996. That was back when Congressman Tsongas was in
Paul
office.
Tsongas. And you should Paul know Tsongas. That.
I know. I said Peter for some reason. My mind's mush at this hour. So it's a staple of Lowell. The Spinners goes back to the Mills. It's huge. And I've gone to games and, you know, obviously you work for them and I grew up going to those games since they've been around my entire life. It's right down the street from where I was raised. So I understand the appeal. I understand the value of that. And I am really pulling for the Spinners to stick around. Do I think it will happen? Probably not, because Larry Lucchino and the Worcester Woo Sox, worst name of all time.
How about that logo?
Oh my God. It's a smiley face. It's the laziest thing ever. But they're, you know, 40 minutes down the road, down 495, and that's going to take away business from Mr. Larry Lucchino. And, you know, he doesn't like that. So that, in addition to the fact that they're doing this to collect a bargaining agreement, the writing's on the wall. And this is the last year that of their contract with the Red Sox. It stinks. That said, the MLB, Major League Baseball, it has gotten to the point where, you know, they have so many drafts and there's so many players who are involved in professional baseball. And a lot of them are just wasting their time at the end of the day. They don't really make it anywhere. And it's still an amazing. What?
Tell them that.
That's true. And maybe you're right. And they figure that out eventually. And I don't think it's time lost. I think it would be an unbelievable experience if you got to play minor league baseball. So I just think there are a lot of people who play it, who make very little money, who don't have a great quality of life when they're doing it, and stand no shot of getting to where they want to go. Obviously, there are the exceptions. Everyone's heard the Daniel Nava story and whatnot. But overall, it's oversaturated. There's no other minor league system like this in the country, and I'm assuming in the world, at least in a similar structure. But you mentioned a good point, and that's the aspect that young families go to these games, and it's a way to reach young people.
So a couple points. First off, to what you said, that not everybody's going to make it as a player. the number of minor league coaches, major league coaches, college coaches, high school coaches that come from minor league ball, general managers, front office members, scouts, it grows the game. It grows the game. It doesn't just create players. I'm talking about minor league baseball as a whole. Secondly, Major League Baseball is not in a position to take away exposure or availability to their games. They should not be taking baseball away from young people. And the fact of the matter is, and it sucks. Look, me and you grow up, you go to Fenway, you get a ticket for $20. You get a beer for $4. That right now, you get a good ticket for $20. You get a beer for $4. You get a hot dog for $2, right? You spend $30 the ball game. $30 now maybe gets you in the door, all the way up under the scoreboard. The family of four, the common fan, the young fan, has been priced out of Fenway and a number of other ballparks across the country. Baseball has become a very corporate environment in terms of fans. So why the hell would you remove this valuable asset you have to get the game in front of young people? And it's so hands-on. A place where they can meet the players. They can go on the field. The spinners and all these other – we keep using the spinners, but there's hundreds of teams like this across the country. They have camps during the summer where kids can come and learn from the players and play on the field and experience baseball in a country where, you know, youth sports is getting slashed across the board. To have this valuable asset to grow your game and slash it, it may help in the short run. It may save you some money in the short run, and that's why they're doing it. Long term, this is going to hurt the game of baseball. And I don't know how somebody can disagree with that. The other thing you have to keep in mind, and I don't necessarily agree with him politically, but he makes a good point, is Bernie Sanders is very against this. Minor League Baseball is one of the top employers in the sports industry in this country.
Yeah.
Second to the NCAA. And I'm not talking about players. I'm talking about everybody, the staff, from social media people, to ushers, to concession stand workers, to people who work the parking, to grounds crew. It's an operation. It is a full operation. You're going to put a lot of people out of work, and that's going to sour a lot of people on baseball and on the MLB. I cannot believe they're thinking about going through with this. This is, this is NFL level shooting yourself in the foot. Again, it will save the money. It will save the money in the short term. That's fine. But you are killing exposure to a game that is desperate for it. And if you don't have the exposure, if you don't have a group in the next generation who both wants to play and, more importantly, watch the game, you're boning yourself. And if they get rid of the spinners, you know what all those kids in Lowell are going to do? When they turn 10 years old, it's time to pick a sport. They're going to play lacrosse. In the spring, they're going to play lacrosse, and you're going to lose an entire generation like that because they can't afford, their family can't afford to take them to the big league ballpark, and they have no other access to the game. You have to keep minor league. Look, they don't need to pump a lot of money into it. I understand maybe rounding off some of the edges. To cut minor league baseball the way they're proposing is a poison pill. They need to wipe this out immediately. And I know it's probably already going to happen. And that's dumb. And I actually thought Manfred was a good commissioner before this, but this is asinine. They need to not do this for the sake of, and I'm the biggest, I'm sorry to go another rant here, not let you talk, but this one actually pisses me off. And maybe it's because I lived it. And I loved working for the spinners this summer. It's honestly amazing. But it's irresponsible to the game of baseball. I am the biggest, baseball has a million problems and they need to fix it. And I'm over it. I am that person. The games are too long. The season's too long. A lot of the players are divas for no reason. They have no defined superstar. These are all problems. But the problems aren't going to be fixed by getting rid of minor league baseball. It's like putting the runner on second in extra innings or making intentional walks automatic. Does it make the game quicker? I guess in a grand sense, yes, it does. But when you – how often are there intentional walks? Oh, boy, you cut 30 seconds out of one game a week for me. Thank you. The runner on second and extra innings. Well, the game's already good. Now I'm invested. You don't need to speed this one up. Speed up the one that's 10-0 after two innings in April when it's freezing out. Yes, I know minor league baseball isn't the most attractive product, but at the end of the day, it's way more beneficial for the major leagues to have that than what they're proposing.
So I think that this is, the MLB being short-sighted. I agree. They should be looking at minor league baseball as an investment, not a financial burden.
Yes.
It's something in which you need to promote the game. And right now, the MLB's priority should be promoting the game of baseball, promoting the sport instead of the league. You promote the sport more so, and obviously they do that, but you put more of an emphasis on it, then you'll get your marketable player, your superstars. And I think they got a couple right now that could be those, you know, not LeBron James figures, but, you know, up there with, you know, other NBA types, NBA superstars or NFL superstars. They haven't succeeded in that. So right now they're going at something that it's a needless place to address. And, you know, long term, yeah, it's probably going to hurt them. So, I obviously said there are too many players in the minor league system. Forget the players. That's the wrong spot to look. And I can kind of acknowledge that. The place to look is the families that will be going right to these games, that will be invested in these games. Now you're removing that form of entertainment. And that's going to be a big issue. And you're, you know, a lot of employees are going to be out of work. There's also a theory, however, that this could be a bargaining chip for the MLB to pressure a lot of these minor league teams to upgrade their facilities or put more local money into their product, which is silly because you're asking, you know, we were talking about this on the morning show. You're asking a city like Lowell, which is already strapped with cash, has a very tight budget being a blue collar city. You're asking them to put more money into, you know, the spinners when the MLB still makes a lot of money. It's a horrible move. And I think we've just grown accustomed to the MLB making misstep after misstep and looking at the complete wrong spot. There are ways to address this game. Trying to shut down minor league baseball is not one of them.
I will say this. On if this does happen, the one bright spot for me, if they get rid of minor league baseball, assuming they handle this correctly, which I don't know if they will, this would be a huge opportunity for college baseball to jump into the same echelon as college basketball and become a nationally popular sport. Because if this is the case, guys aren't going to be in the majors as long. You're probably going to have guys who are, because part of this, I don't remember if this was a, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was the same proposal, might have been a separate proposal, was moving the draft to January and making it in the offseason. So if that's the case, you're looking at guys who are, first of all, you're not going to have a 40-round draft. It's going to be easier to follow. And you're looking at guys who are picked high, probably going right to the majors. And if not going right to the majors, being fast-tracked and maybe only spending a year in the minors. So I think and you're definitely not going to have teams signing guys out of high school because you no longer have that vehicle to develop them long term like you do now with rookie league and able. So the one bright side to me for this is I think it would be a wonderful launching pad for college baseball, which I think is a very underrated product. The College World Series is great every year. There's a lot of talent. There's a lot of parity. I would hope that if this is the case and if this scenario plays out, that there is a huge bump in interest in college baseball because college baseball is very accessible. And there's more teams in college baseball than there are in the minors. College baseball is all over the country, except for in the Northeast, where there shouldn't be college baseball because they start playing in February, and that's another story. But,
I think that's the big issue, right? Like, so if Lowell goes away, I mean, UMass Lowell isn't going to come in and fill that void, no disrespect to that program. BC, you know, Northeastern, Holy Cross, UMass, those schools do produce pretty good talent. A lot of those guys end up getting drafted, but that's not going to be enough. I don't think.
You hope it is. You hope that you hope that just people lock into it. I'm not saying it would happen immediately, but if all of a sudden, because this is uncharted ground, right? College basketball and college football were monumentally popular while the NBA and NFL were starting. What got the NBA and NFL popular were people wanting to continue to follow their favorite players in college. So you're trying to do it the other way now. And you're trying to get people to go backwards. But if you start having guys who are rookies and coming right out of college into the majors and producing, which we don't even know if that's possible, very rarely done. But if you start having those kind of scenarios, then maybe people go back and watch college baseball to see who the big rookie will be next year. maybe you build that. I think on the other hand, it could go completely the other way. And in 20 years, you have a league that's entirely Cuban, Dominican, and Japanese. And there's just no Americans left playing the game. I think that's a realistic possibility, too.
Well, in 10 years, and this was a tidbit that Sean Smith, the vice president of the Spinners, said earlier today on my show. In 10 years, 50% of the MLB players, their first language will be Spanish.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a diverse game, which is more of an argument to keep it in a city like Lowell, which is 50% minority.
Right.
So like you have it in a lot of these urban environments.
To clarify my point, it wasn't necessarily a minority thing, but it was, if you look at the list of players who have gone directly from amateur ball to the majors without making a stop at any level in the minor leagues, the majority of that list, at least in the last 20 years, is made up of Japanese and Cuban players.
Sure, yeah.
Because they come here ready. They don't need seasoning in the minors, whereas even the best American college players and high school players have to go to the minors for multiple seasons. So I just think if you cut down the minors, teams are going to start looking for those quick fixes. They're going to be more aggressive in going out and getting that Japanese 22-year-old that can already play versus a 21-year-old from LSU who still needs a year or two, who you're going to have to pay probably a similar amount.
There will also be a new league that does come about, not to replace these short season single A affiliates or whatever, but it's going to be like an independent league. So they won't be affiliated with
the affiliation's the whole game. People aren't going if it's not affiliated.
Yeah, it's the Red Sox affiliation that's what brings people into the park. The only, you know, there's the exception of the Fisher Cats, but they have a beautiful venue and they've had Vladimir Guerrero Jr. up there and Craig Biggio.
I'm not saying it's affiliation with the Red Sox. It's just affiliation, right? Why does nobody watch the MLS in this country? Because it's not the top level. People want elite competition, and well, yes, by definition, the minor leagues is not the top level. It's not elite competition.
It is elite competition, but it's just not the most elite.
When you go, Vladimir Guerrero's a perfect example. You go, you see him, he's going to play in the majors. You see him on TV. You say, hey, we saw that guy when he went to the game in New Hampshire. Independent league, even if there is a tie-in with the majors. Do you know the majors technically has a league in Mexico that's qualified as a AAA league?
Oh,
right,
really?
Now,
yeah,
but there's no direct affiliation, so nobody cares about it because there's no pipeline. The pipeline is what makes the whole thing work. If you get rid of, like, if you told me, all right, the majors are going to like keep funding all these teams, but prospects are going to come right from college, and there's no more minor league system, and you draft somebody and they're on your roster, the minor league teams are just, you know, it's like they do in Europe with the soccer teams where they have the different levels. Nobody would go to the games. It's all about the pipeline and the affiliation. That's what does all of it. All right, we're running long here. I'm going to wrap it up. We didn't talk about the Bruins. I will say David Pastrnak is the greatest player in hockey history, apparently. It's been fantastic. We'll definitely get into them on the next show. We owe them that. Until then, follow us on Twitter at Comet Podcast. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com, under the podcast tab. For Alex Lovitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thank you for listening.